Welcome back to Oh Snapped, the show where we watch Snapped and we tell you about it. Yeah, I'm Torella.
I'm Tori.
And here we go.
Oh, also, if you just started watching this show and you're not familiar with our other show, Killer Queens, check us out over there.
Watching this podcast, you mean?
Did I say watching?
You did.
Because I said watch the show.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about the jerk that is Donna Somerville.
The, the lint licker.
Oh.
The cootie queen. Stinky McStink face.
Yeah.
The she butt munch. That too.
Yeah. That is Donna Somerville.
We recently came back across the Orbit commercial where the woman says, "Who are you calling cootie queen? Lint licker."
Remember, was it every commercial where she would go, "Fabulous."
Uh-huh. A good clean feeling, no matter what.
Ugh, yes.
Yeah.
I missed that commercial. What happened to Orbitz?
I don't know.
Wait, is it just Orbit gum or Orbitz? Because Orbitz is like that travel thing.
Okay, I think it's just Orbit, yeah.
Man, I suck. I've been slowly turning into like that old Southern lady that puts an S on the end of everything because I didn't realize it, but Electronic Express is the correct. And I was like, Electronics Express.
I thought it was Electronics Express. It's not.
It's Electronic Express.
Hmm.
Just one electronic.
Well, at least you didn't try to call it Radio Shacks because those have been out of business for a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I've been trying to say Radio Shacks, but I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and get going.
Yeah, this case is perfect for that because it's slightly Southern or at least farmer-ish.
Sure.
So, yeah. All right. So, Donna Somerville.
On November 13th, 2001, Donna Somerville dialed 911 in a panic. Her husband wasn't breathing.
He was blue in the face, unresponsive.
Paramedics frantically tried to revive him as Donna looked on.
She was as hysterical as you can be.
It was too late. After 45 minutes, 57-year-old Hamilton Somerville was pronounced dead.
There was nothing suspicious.
Hamilton was Donna's fourth and by far her richest husband. His death made his wife an instant millionaire, but it would also eventually make her a murder suspect.
So the episode starts November 13th, 2001. Donna dialed 911 in a panic. Her husband was not breathing, and after 45 minutes of CPR, they pronounced Hamilton Somerville dead.
We get off to ground running with these.
Yeah, 0 to 60 here.
Yeah. So Hamilton was Donna's fourth and by far her richest husband. And as soon as he died, she became an instant millionaire. But she would also become an instant murder suspect.
Bum, bum, bum.
And then literally they're just like, Donna Jean Echocard. Like, it's just so fast. I don't know.
Well, and disjointed. It's just like, I think that they have really found their stride over the years.
Oh, for
sure. This is a prime example of a little shaky ground, but that's okay.
Yeah, I feel like I totally get it because there's definitely been some stuff like with the podcast. We have changed format here or there. Not a lot, but just, you know, we've tried this or we've tried that or even, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes it doesn't work and you have to like, got to try stuff. And then you got to say it didn't work.
And it takes time to create the perfection that we have now where we have hit the ultimate level of perfect podcastness. So can't get there overnight.
No. Also, when I was editing, I realized that in the last episode or the last one that we posted, which is, I think, Adele Craven, I called Sharon Martin Sheila Martin because we're doing Wild Wild Country on Killer Queens in our Patreon level. And I called her Sheila and I was like, when I was editing it, I'm like, Sharon, I am so sorry. I know your name is Sharon Martin.
Well, yeah, but your favorite thing to do is change up everybody's names and then tell me that I heard it wrong. Gaslighter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my bad. Okay. So Donna Jean Echocard grew up poor and restless in the gritty blue-collar town of, what was it?
Paramus,
New Jersey. And she left home in 1970 when she was just 17. I guess she kind of felt like there wasn't anything there for her. She wasn't going to go anywhere.
Exactly. And a journalist from Vanity Fair said she got very frustrated with her prospects there and left on the back of a Harley Davidson with her then boyfriend, who later became her first husband, until she got to Orange County, Virginia. And at first I was like, Orange County?
Whoa. And then they're like, Virginia.
You're
like,
right. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But even so, I mean, Orange County, Virginia is apparently a really fancy schmancy town. Like, ladies who lunch live there. Garden parties happen there. It's a very upmarket.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then here comes 17-year-old Donna and her boyfriend on their Harley Davidson. And I mean, obviously, they're not, just because you live there doesn't mean you just get the money. So they struggled for a while.
Exactly.
And the marriage did not last. They breezed past her second marriage. So they say the first marriage didn't last, neither did her second. Nothing to report there. By 1985,
she was on her third, living in a cramped trailer with a Vietnam veteran and a baby daughter, Johanna.
Why was the third one notable, and why did they feel the need to be like a Vietnam veteran?
Yeah.
Like, I'm grateful for the service, sure, but like, it's just very strange.
Yeah, that just to like specifically focus on that. Yeah, it's like, okay, fine. I don't know, maybe they didn't want to just be like, her second marriage didn't last, her third marriage didn't last. Like, they were like, we got to at least say one thing about the third marriage. What do we know about it? And they're like, I think she married a Vietnam veteran. They're like, perfect, put it in there.
Print it, press, everything's good, let's do it. Like, they needed something to fluff it up a little bit, I guess. So
at least one thing.
Yes.
So Donna put herself through nursing school and then divorced her third husband.
Right. Vietnam veteran. Out.
Out. She was supporting herself and her daughter as a hospice nurse. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive for, like, she put herself through school and became a nurse. Nurses typically make pretty good money. So that's, I mean,
kind of a go-getter, right?
Good for her for being able to do that. Yeah. In the summer of 1990, so she's a hospice nurse, she started caring for a woman named Sydney Somerville, which was the wife of wealthy farmer Hamilton Somerville. And unfortunately, Sydney was dying of cancer at that time, and she required doses of morphine to control her. This is what he says, a Randy Krantz special prosecutor, which when I first saw his name on there, I was thinking Ken Kratz. From Making a Murderer.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, but it's Krantz, so it's different. But he was like,
Sydney Somerville required doses of morphine to control her intractable pain. Donna Somerville was able, was skilled and knowledgeable in her training and her experience specifically with Sydney to administer those medications.
It's like, yeah, I know, because she's a hospice nurse. That's her job. Like,
I feel like every episode that we cover, we're like, why did you spend so much time on this when this needed more attention? I just do not understand the priorities.
They're like, talk about her training and the morphine. Talk about all how she knows all the morphine stuff. It's like, there's other stuff we can talk about.
Yeah, draw that out. Say at least 20 words on the subject.
Exactly. And make it sound like you are writing up an official affidavit while you're doing it. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Hamilton was a different man from any of the men that Donna had grown up with. So for starters, he was a multimillionaire. He was an heir to the DuPont fortune. And Michael Lacasse, an investigator, said Hamilton was a gentleman farmer, I guess. He was doing it because he loved it.
Is gentleman farmer a phrase? Like, is that a thing?
Like a gentleman caller, but gentleman farmer?
Yeah, like the way he's saying it, I'm assuming that means he didn't have to be a farmer to make his living. He did it because he liked it. But I've just never heard that term.
What did he farm?
They don't say. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's like, it's like they may as well have called him a transponster. We don't know what he did, really.
No. And we're just taking their word for it.
Yeah. And we're never going to find out. They don't ever talk about it.
Nope.
When Ham wasn't working on the farm, he would go down to the Somerset Center store, which was like down the hill from his house. And this is like, if you live out in the country, you know exactly what this store is. It's the store where all the old men go drink coffee in the mornings. They talk about the weather, whatever, all the chores they got to do for the day. They go and do their stuff. And then the afternoon, they come back and they talk about what all they did that day before dinner time. So it's like,
and probably what they have to do again the next morning. And then they'll go and meet up and talk about that some more. Yep.
Yeah. And they said he would sit there and chain smoke camels and chat with his neighbors. And his neighbor, Tony Garnett,
I love Tony said, Garnett.
I know, I love him too. I might just play what he says because his accent is so, like, I like
it's
it.
So good.
Yeah. But, you know, he's basically like,
he was one of us. I mean, we all grew up in the same community and, you know, he never frowned on anybody and he never looked down on anybody. And he was just one of us.
He never made any of us feel like
less than.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, we were all friends, equals. He was just one of the guys kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Donna took care of Sydney until she died on September 3rd, 1990. And then shortly after that, only a few months later, his mom was dying from cancer. And Donna took care of her too. And she died on January 14th, 1991.
Jeez.
It's a lot at one time.
It really is. With the two most important women in Ham's life gone, he craved love, comfort, and support. And luckily, sweet little baby Donna was there to help.
Mm-hmm. They talked to a couple people that work at the Somerset Center store. So one of them, Wanda Donovan, said, Ham was hurting because he lost two people in his family close together. Donna took away his loneliness. No doubt.
No doubt.
I bet she did. Just wait till y'all hear how she took away his loneliness first.
Yes. Well, Ham was playing it like Britney because his loneliness was killing him.
Well, that is true. Poor Ham. So Donna goes to a party with Ham, and they don't say where the party was.
Whose party it is.
They just say she went with him to a party, and then Donna goes into a bedroom. She comes out a few minutes later with a fur coat on and said, I have a surprise for you, and opens it up and was totally naked underneath. And that was that. I'm like,
that's a bold move, not knowing what you would receive.
Uh-huh.
Because you're going to want to hope that doing something like that will get you the results you're wanting. What if he was like, ooh, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm not interested in
no
that.
No sex for me, thanks.
But also, like, you know, we got a lot of information about how she knew how to dose morphine as a hospice nurse. But what about the information about, like, whose house was this? Was this her fur coat? Was it somebody else's fur coat?
Right.
Are there people at this party? Like,
yeah.
So I got a lot of questions about this party.
Oh, 100%. I do not understand what has happened here, but yeah, I've got some questions and I need answers.
Yeah, we're not going to get them. So just
stuff that in a sack and move on.
Exactly. On August 17th, 1991, less than a year after Sydney died, Ham married Donna. Now, everybody, I get it. He needed to move on, like all the things. He was 47. She was 39. I guess they don't make a big deal about it necessarily, but they kind of do by saying that. I'm like, that's not really a big difference.
Yeah, 8 years, it's not that notable, but they act like it is.
Yeah, but just the fact that it's like his wife died in September of 90 and then August 1991, you've already married somebody else. And it's the hospice nurse that took care of your mom and grandmother when they were both dying from cancer.
Wait. Oh, okay. I was like, no, it wasn't Ham's mom and grand. What are you talking about?
No. His daughters were like, excuse me, what? They did not appreciate that.
No.
At all.
But in grand snapped tradition, if Donna was worried about her stepdaughter's feelings, she sure didn't show it. And she went ahead and lived grandly on Ham's 345-acre estate that was named Mount Athos.
Sounds very Grecian.
Yes. Where would you, what do you envision when you think of somewhere called Mount Athos?
I think there is a Parthenon type structure at the top.
Yes.
There are, you live in the clouds. Zeus is there.
You need a Pegasus to carry you up to said clouds.
Oh, nice touch of Pegasus. Yeah.
Something. Mm-hmm. I mean, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And Hercules lifts you up every time you need to reach something real high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what it looked like anyway.
If it didn't, I've got a bone to pick with.
Yeah, exactly. We've got some notes.
Yeah.
And we'll send over the plans later if you just want to take a look at them. It's not a big deal. Donna and Ham went everywhere together, often holding hands.
Yes, or HH if you are Chandler and Janice messaging on early. I don't think AIM was even invented then, but still.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody said they, like, when they were together, they would be, like, giggling like teenagers. They seemed very infatuated with each other. It was this, like, exciting, you know, new romance kind of thing. And, like, literally everybody in town described them as a very, very happy couple.
Oh, yes.
Until.
Right. Well, but the thing is, too, so Ham adopted Donna's daughter, Johanna, and Donna eventually quit her nursing job to take care of things on the farm. She also became a regular at the Somerset Center store. And Sarah Rogers, who was a Somerset Center store clerk, said that they were together all the time, that she would help on the farm and she would come in with coveralls and she looked like she played the part of farmer very well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they said she took to it. You know, it wasn't like she married him and then said, I'm not ever going to do anything on the farm that's beneath me or whatever. She jumped right in and got her hands dirty, too.
Yes, she did. So it was a wonderful life, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. Detective LaCasse said that they were perceived as a happy couple at least sometime into their marriage. But as the couple approached their 10th wedding anniversary, rumors began to spread that Donna was cheating on her husband.
But with who?
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes, exactly.
All of them. Yeah.
All of the people.
Yeah, literally, like, people in town, the clerks at the Somerset store, I mean, they saw her all the time, and they said that she would be rubbing all over other men, you know, kind of touching all over them, very affectionate with other men, and they noticed that she certainly wasn't acting that way with Ham.
I mean, that's blatant. And for such a small town, people are going to talk.
Yeah, for sure.
It just doesn't make any sense to me why, but maybe she didn't care. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe she didn't.
So some of that gossip wasn't true. It was said that some people had it out for Donna. They had seemed suspicious of her from the start just because of the history of Ham marrying his hospice worker.
Yeah, and probably a lot of them felt like this allegiance to Sydney, right? Because, you know, they've been there a long time. They're pillars of the community, and it's like, I mean, you can't judge somebody from wanting to move on. I mean, she's passed away, but I think to some people, it's like, okay, that was pretty quick. And we don't know if we can trust this person. She's new, you know?
Well, and she kind of got in there at a very vulnerable time for the family and
yes,
became this, I don't know, it feels kind of snake in the grass-ish.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah.
Yes.
Donna did give them plenty to talk about, though. Whether the rumors were true or not, Ham seemed completely oblivious to them. And Sarah, the clerk, said that Ham just listened to whatever Donna said, and he just loved her wholeheartedly. So they celebrate their 10th wedding anniversary at Mount Athos. And then a couple months later, Ham's health took a sudden turn for the worse. And I also am like, okay, for the worse. Was it bad before? They didn't talk about that he had any health problems or anything, which is going to come into play here. So, like, do we have significant health problems that we need to be focusing on or what? But it's just like, it seemed like everything was fine. And then all of a sudden his health goes downhill.
Yeah. The only thing that we have any knowledge of up until this point, health related wise, is that he chain smokes camels. But I have heard of plenty of people, I don't know how and I don't know why, they chain smoke their whole lives and they die of something really random, like getting hit by a truck. Like, nothing, that doesn't play into their health problems at all.
Yeah.
So that doesn't, it's not necessarily the most telling thing. It's like, again, why did you spend so much time on this thing when you could be given a little bit more detail on things that are actually pertinent?
Yeah, give a health history of Ham, like, we need to know, did he have problems like this? Because this is when he starts having some symptoms that are like, okay, because the Sarah Rogers, the clerk, said, well, he thought he had the flu or he thought he might have had a stroke. I'm like, well, okay, which one? But also, are we surprised he thinks he had a stroke? Or are we like, well, it was coming any day now, you know, like,
right. Some people, it's not really unexpected for them to go downhill because they've already had these other things happen, or maybe they're just kind of rickety.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't. And he was only 47 when they got married. So by this point, he's 57 then, I guess. He's still not old. Mm-mm. So, I mean, he's not in the best shape, I would say. But
it's not like you're talking about a 92-year-old that you're like, well.
Yeah, I mean, you know. You would expect something like a stroke or something like that to happen as you get much, much older.
Yes.
And he's also very active because operating a farm like that, you are lifting heavy things. You are on your feet all the time. You're taking care of livestock or whatever it is. Like, I mean, he's pretty active. Even just maintaining a garden is hard work, you know?
Yes. But also the symptoms of a flu and the symptoms of a stroke, vastly different. I don't know if that's... Those two are so different, it doesn't make sense to me why she would pull those two things out of her head. I don't understand. It's like, Well, he could have sneezed or he could have had a heart attack. Well, that doesn't go together.
Maybe she was doing an impersonation of WebMD, because when you look on WebMD and you're like, I have a headache, and they're like, okay, it could just be straining your eyes from the computer or you have a brain tumor.
Exactly.
Like, it's one of the two. So yes. Good luck to ya.
Exactly.
Then, okay, so he either had the flu or a stroke, you know, same, right? And then he also said he woke up one morning and he felt like he'd been drugged. I feel like that is incredibly important.
It is 100% important, but they don't spend any time on it. This is like the phase of Snapped where they want to surprise you with this M. Night Shyamalan twist where they like throw out this tiny little clue. And then at the end, they're like, boom, we got you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's not enough. And again, like, I mean, we say it actually every episode. These are short episodes. Like season one and season two are like, once you get down to it, like 22 minutes of actual the show.
Blink and
I don't know
it.
What season three is like. You know, these later episodes are an hour long with commercial breaks, probably what, like 43 minutes of content or something. So,
yeah,
I mean, we're getting very little. But yeah, why did he feel that way? Why did he feel like he'd been drugged? What made him feel like he had the flu or, you know, like, yeah, that would be good to know.
I don't want this entire episode to be just us complaining about the way Snapped is filmed. But when you get down to it, and bare bones, it's 22 minutes long, maybe let's not spend so much time on something that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, be like really selective with what you put in there.
Sure.
And that's coming from two ladies who have tons of bad reviews. So like, we get it, you know? Because
exactly.
People are like, well, try putting out a good podcast then. I'm like, all right, touche. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. But okay, so Sarah tells him, if you feel like you've been drugged, you need to go to the doctor. Definitely. And they said that Donna did not take him to a doctor, which they felt was very suspicious. The people in the town, like, she's a nurse. Why wouldn't she know to take him to a doctor? Now, if they thought he had a stroke, yeah. If he's just thinking, or if they're thinking this could be the flu or whatever, I don't feel like that's so suspicious, because most people who work in the medical field are not going to go to the doctor unless it's like an absolute dire need kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of them will just be like, oh, I know what this is and I'll take care of it at home. You know, I know what to do for it or whatever. Or they might not at that time, I guess, text the doctor they work with and be like, what do you think about this? Or ask them when they're at work or whatever. But
right.
I didn't find that as suspicious, but there is something I will find very suspicious in a few minutes.
Yes. On November 13th, 2001, Ham spent the day in bed. At 8:44 p.m. that evening, Donna frantically calls 911. And this is where the episode begins. So she says that she found Ham blue in the face. James Fenwick, detective, said that Donna said she had made him dinner that night, brought it up to him because he wasn't feeling well. So then she goes back downstairs. And when she comes back up, she finds him in that condition, blue in the face, not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
While paramedics were attending to him, Donna was downstairs with the police, and she said to the police that she was worried the EMTs were hurting him.
Yeah. And the sheriff's deputy, Shane Nelson, who was there like a first responder, he said she was about as hysterical as you could be. I mean, it definitely seemed like a very genuine reaction to them. However, this is what I find so suspicious, among like other things that will be suspicious. She kept asking Shane Nelson to go upstairs and ask them to stop CPR under the guise or pretense that because it's hurting him, please stop it. And it's like, You're a nurse. You know that if his face is blue, his airway is obstructed. He's not getting oxygen. There's something going on. CPR is going to be your best bet until you can get him in the ambulance into the hospital.
Well, right.
Why would you ask them to stop that?
Okay. If you're worried about CPR hurting him and you want them to stop, what's the alternative? Death.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, I don't want you to I just don't want it to be too rough. So I'd just rather he die. Thanks.
Yeah. What is that? And she's a hospice nurse that's supposed to make, well, maybe this is why. She's a hospice nurse. Her job is to make everybody as comfortable as possible until they die. And she's like, well, I mean, if you guys are going to perform CPR, that's actually really traumatic for him as he's on his way out, because I've made sure that he's on his way out.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just so weird. Like, why would you ask somebody to stop? If you genuinely wanted this person to survive, you would be like, even as they say, you know,
there's nothing else we can do.
He's not responding. Yeah, there's nothing else we can do. We've seen so many people be like, no, keep trying. I'll do it. Let me do it for a while. Like, you know, but she's just like, you know, just quit because it's going to hurt him. I'd really just, yeah, let's see what happens.
There's no point to this. Yeah.
He might just wake up. I don't know. It's like, no, you know that it just didn't make any sense. So after 45 minutes, EMTs gave up and pronounced him dead. To police and paramedics, it seemed like Ham had had a heart attack and no one thought that he'd been murdered. But Donna's behavior after Ham was pronounced dead made some people wonder if it was from natural causes. So we've already got her being like, no CPR, thanks. We don't uncheck that box, please. But the special prosecutor, Mark Robinette, said that Donna gave multiple inconsistent statements of what happened that night, which on its face is not necessarily suspicious because
inconsistencies in stories happen. That's fine.
Yeah. And trauma, you're in shock. Like, you may not remember the exact order that something happened, you know,
but
whatever it is.
But we're talking minute details that you didn't remember before, but then did, or you left something out the second time, whatever. Not complete changes in your story.
Exactly. So her inconsistency.
Whoa. Did you have a stroke?
I think I did. Her inconsistencies were either that like she told some people she tried CPR for as long as 30 minutes. She told one person she never tried CPR because she just knew he was beyond help. So that, I mean, that's completely different. Like, either you did or you didn't do it. Which one?
There is no way that you could just in a traumatic moment completely forget if you did or didn't do something that significant. CPR, that's a big deal.
Yeah, life-saving efforts.
Yes.
It's hard work. You're not going to forget that you did that. And for 30 minutes or not at all, that's a big difference too. It's not like I held my breath for 10 seconds or maybe I didn't hold my breath. I mean, it's just so different.
Mm-hmm.
But she also said that she wanted Ham to be cremated immediately. And not just like as the natural process goes, that's what he wanted to have happen after he passed. She said that Ham had always told her. Now, as far as I know, this didn't appear in a will or anything like that.
And no one else could corroborate this. It was just her.
Yeah, she said that he had always told her personally that he wanted to be cremated the same night that he died, which is not possible.
Well, that is a big ask and just kind of ridiculous. Like,
yeah,
who could that benefit to have that something like that happen? I mean, it's outlandish and suspicious.
Yeah.
But why would someone need someone to be cremated and evidence to be gotten rid of that quickly?
Exactly.
Donna.
And there's a process with that. There's like paperwork that has to happen even with a natural death. Had she not made such a stink about it? Well, I guess it doesn't matter. But had she not made such a stink about it, they may not have investigated it at all. Mm-hmm. If she just let it go through the process and then had him cremated because she was the wife, she could make that decision. But she's making a big deal about it.
She's drawn a lot of attention to herself.
Yes, exactly. And Ham's daughter, Alita, first of all, was like, no, he did not die of natural causes. So at this point, he's brought to the funeral home and he's scheduled to be cremated 2 days later, which, again, not fast enough for Donna. And Alita's like, I don't think he died of natural causes, but I want an autopsy. I want to know what happened. And hours before the cremation was supposed to happen, she contacts the district attorney. Alita does. And they keep showing a picture of Alita, and it looks like she's maybe, it looks like it's a shot while like she's in court maybe. And she's kind of like, she's got this look on her face. Like you can tell she's not super happy in this moment. And it's like she's looking, asking for the manager or something, like she's mad and, you know, she's like at a store or whatever. It's just, and I'm like, guys, there's other pictures of her. Come on. Could you not get a picture of her that was just like her looking mad? Like, I'm sure she's a very nice lady.
Right. Like reach out and maybe a more flattering photo could have been used, but.
Yeah, that would be, because it's the only one they ever show. And I saw somebody shared, I think Jamie shared in the Facebook group, the Killer Queens Facebook group, this SNL skit where, what's his name? Hader, Bill Hader plays Keith Morrison doing Dateline. And when they show the picture of the victim, he's like, and this is Dateline, so we only have one picture and we're going to show it over and over and over. Like, yeah, exactly.
So accurate.
Yeah. So she calls the district attorney and explains what's going on. And he's like, okay, that sounds legit. I'm going to order the autopsy. And this happened at 9:30 in the morning. And the cremation was scheduled for 10.
Man, that is like so down to the wire. It's not even funny.
I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know. Me too. I'm actually not even on my seat anymore.
Nope. But Donna flipped out.
Oh, yeah. So Donna calls Sheriff Feldman of the Orange County Sheriff's Department and demands that he stops the autopsy. And he's like, I can't do that, girl. Cannot do it. So he said that the Commonwealth attorney, Tim Saner, had ordered the autopsy. So then Donna's like, okay, fine. I'll call Tim Saner and get the autopsy stopped. But he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, he refused. He was like, there's compelling evidence to me that I think I need to proceed with this. So She's not happy. They go ahead and have a memorial the next day, and they had to do the memorial without Ham's body there, unfortunately, because now he's having the autopsy. And most people noticed that Donna was acting strangely. They said she didn't cry. She didn't look like a grieving widow. Again, to me, that's neither here nor there. You cannot judge a person's, especially for a murder, guilt or innocence, by how they act at a funeral or whatever.
Well, I mean, that's the same exact reason why you can't, lie detector tests aren't admissible in court. Like, it doesn't really tell you much.
Right. It's just like, you know, how some kids don't do well on standardized tests. It doesn't tell you that they're not
smart
or intelligent, and tells you that maybe
they're bad test takers.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The police got the preliminary results of the autopsy back, and it didn't look like there was any foul play. Everything looked okay. But the toxicology results took a couple months to come back. So in between that time, they're just kind of, you know, waiting to see what happens.
Farting around, waiting.
So far, they don't have any evidence that anything happened. When the toxicology report came back, they were shocked. They said that Hamilton died of drug poisoning. It was a combination of drugs that would, in their opinion, be toxic and cause his death. Specifically, he died of an overdose of morphine, codeine, and oxycodone. And, you know, there's like, sure, you could go buy drugs on the street if you wanted, right? Get yourself an overdose, or maybe he had a prescription for a pain medicine after a surgery or something like that. You cannot get morphine that way. I don't think you can. I've never heard of that.
I never have either. I have heard from other people or other accounts of this kind of stuff. If one wants morphine, you have to doctor shop for it. I don't think that you can go to your local drug dealer and ask for a morphine.
Yeah.
You sure can't get two.
No. Do you do your BOGO morphines here? Or?
Right.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
No.
So, I mean, that puts a lot of suspicion on Donna, because if you've got to get morphine at the hospital
or a doctor's office or something,
well, who has access?
Sure. And Donna, we learned from the very detailed description of Donna's knowledge of morphine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She knows how to administer it.
She does. She's very knowledgeable. But also what we find out, because remember in the 5 minutes ago, they told us that, like, there's only 20 minutes, so it's been relatively recently. They said that she quit working and started working on the farm. Well, what was it, a couple months before Ham's death? She went back to work. at the hospital. She was like, I think she was volunteering, but she was going a couple days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 4 months. So the police opened the murder investigation because she definitely had opportunity. She was home alone with him.
And we have a little bit of a motive because she is, oh gosh, what was it? She's going around town flirting the heck out of everybody.
You are never going to let me live that down.
It's the best thing that I've ever heard. But that's what she's doing. She's rubbing all over everybody. She's flaunting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And they initially, police didn't think that Ham knew about that, that he maybe just was totally unaware of it. But as they investigate, they find out that that's different. But yeah, so we've got some motive. And then we've also got like the means, because there's not very many people. If it had just been oxycodone or codeine or whatever, it might be a different story, but she specifically, as a hospice nurse, has direct access to morphine. And she was there for a couple months. So when they looked into at her at the hospital, they didn't find any morphine missing necessarily. But if you take small amounts over time, it's not like she took a bottle of morphine home that day, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't like that. But if you're taking little bits at a time, because she's shorting doses by a little bit of her patients who are in immense pain and need it, then she could get enough to do what she needs to do.
Exactly. So there's motive, means,
opportunity.
It sounds opportunity. Yeah, you got plenty there to definitely start or open an investigation. That's
for sure.
About as far as you can get, right? So they go to Mount Athos and they're hoping to find some trace of drugs, but they didn't find anything. But they did find a nurse's drug manual that was purchased a month before Ham's death, and the page next to morphine was marked. There was also a page described the dosage for morphine, starting with therapeutic doses all the way to a toxic dose.
Yeah. Which could go either way, right? Because defense is just going to say, well, she hadn't worked in the hospital for 10 years. She needed to brush back up. If she miscalculates a dosage, that could be detrimental to a patient's health. So yes, absolutely. Of course, she marked the morphine page. Of course, she looked at what the dosages are. So right. Unfortunately, I think that's not a point for anybody.
No, I don't think so either. It's 100% circumstantial, and there's no telling of what the intent is behind doing that. But they did find proof that Ham was about to initiate divorce proceedings when they went into like his office or paperwork or whatever and found that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when police feels like they found both the means and the motive for Ham's death.
Yep. But this is still circumstantial, because even though they find papers that say he was about to divorce her, we still don't know 100% if Donna knew about that, you know, and I'm sure the defense is going to say, well, okay, fine. If he was going to divorce her, fine. But she didn't know about it, so that doesn't give her motive, you know, whatever. They felt like they needed to put some pressure on Donna, and they needed her to crack. In October 2002, prosecutors called witnesses before a grand jury, friends, family, anyone who'd have something to say about Ham's death, and they also got a warrant to tap Donna's phone line. So while Donna was talking to one of her alleged lovers on this tapped phone line, they said it sounded like she was trying to hide something and that she was trying to tell witnesses what to say or not to say, and was also telling them to get a lawyer. And that's all we hear about that. I'm like, what did she say? What did they say?
Exactly. Like, can we have transcribed reports of that?
Yeah, because you cannot walk into court and be like, well, it sounded like she was trying to hide something. Guilty. Like, no, exactly. We need some details about that. This is this is the meat of the case here. We need to know this stuff.
Well, if you were hoping that police got more evidence than what we've just heard and went ahead and charged Donna with the murder, you'd be wrong. Because in February 2003, 15 months after Ham's murder, Orange County Police charged Donna with Ham's murder.
With, no more than what we've already told you, which is a couple of guesses.
Exactly.
Because again, like, yeah, she does have she does have access to the morphine.
Right.
But we don't have anybody at the hospital saying, yeah, actually, after one of her shifts, morphine was gone. So you still can't use that as evidence. I mean, you can put it out there for a jury to say, well, she had access to it. It's possible that she took it. That's not enough. You can't say it's possible. Mm-mm. Because it's also possible she didn't. So like...
Exactly. It's just not enough.
No.
The city of Orange County, they were split down the middle of who believed what. And here comes Dr. Helen Smith.
She's back!
She says that...
Society sees these women in two different lights. One is... you know, anger that a woman would deceive them. And the other is these women can't possibly be guilty because women don't do things like that.
And I mean, it's that whole like caretaker thing too. You know, it's like you're immediately trusted because you're the caretaker. Like you're here to protect you're a nurse or in the medical field. Like you wouldn't use that to put somebody's health in danger. And unfortunately, some people do. And it's
Janine Jones.
Mm-hmm. So Donna's bail was set to $300,000 and she's like, fine, whatever. You want cash? You want me to like scrape that from underneath the couch? Where do you like, I don't care about that.
Exactly. Chump change.
Exactly. So she paid it. She went home to Mount Athos to await her trial. And the trial started June 17th, 2004. If convicted, she faced 20 years to life in prison. And the courtroom was packed. Everybody, and like, the people who went there were either there to support Donna or...
support Ham.
Yeah, so they wore buttons with one of their faces on it.
But I feel like that is wildly insensitive because no matter what, if you think that Donna did or didn't do it, Ham still died. So it's not like there's a line drawn in the sand. I mean, I'm sure to Ham's daughters it might feel that way. If you support right. Donna, then you obviously don't support Ham. But I don't think... the whole buttons thing really strikes a nerve with me. I just don't think that that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe you wear one for Ham. And then if you do support Donna, maybe you put a picture of them together or something. Like, I don't know. Right. Yeah. It's just like, because if you're, yeah, if you're only showing Donna, then it's like, well, it's not Ham against Donna. He's a victim here. So
right. I feel like that's exactly how victims get lost.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This was interesting and honestly a brilliant move by her defense. They opted for a bench trial, so there was no jury, just a judge. I'm not sure why...
the prosecution went along with this and said yes.
Yeah, because they both agreed on it. But I think in the defense's perspective, it was definitely very smart to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you remove emotion from it. Like, now we're just looking at facts. The prosecution's argument was that Donna had been taking drugs from her work and poisoning Ham's food for months. And like we said, there was no record of drugs missing, but, you know, they hypothesize it would be very easy for her to get the drugs. So you're asking a jury to take a big leap. Sometimes they'll do that if enough emotion is there. The judge, though, you're asking the judge to do a lot of guessing, and you cannot guess in a murder trial.
Well, yeah, and I feel like for if you're going on just circumstantial evidence, your best bet is to go with the jury because unfortunately, I don't feel like this is very fair at all. But if the more you defame someone's character, the more you're going to get that emotion to run high and people to say, okay, well, I think she's guilty. A judge is not going to do that. They're going to throw all that out.
Yeah, unless it's Casey Anthony. Which I still don't understand.
I can't even discuss it. I cannot go there today.
I know. But the other thing, I mean, again, I know we just don't get this information, but they're saying she's been poisoning him for months. And we do know that he hadn't been feeling good for a couple months by that point. And he was having some very strange symptoms and he felt like he'd been drugged and stuff like that. I hope that they brought those people on as witnesses to talk about that. But I also hope that they brought an expert on to talk about the effects of those particular morphine poisoning or whatever, because you can't just say, we think he's been, or we think she's been poisoning him for months and then provide nothing to back that up. He didn't exactly go to the doctor, so we don't, you know, have any blood work or anything like that, but if he'd gone to the doctor and had blood work, they would have found, I don't know. I don't know what all they test for, but
there would have been a record of him, of the suspicion, at least.
Right. Yeah. Prosecution also reminded the judge that Donna started volunteering at the hospice a month before Ham's death after 10 years of not working. They were having marital difficulties, which was the motive behind the crime. And they claimed that Ham had discovered through her cell phone bills that she was having an affair. Witnesses claim that Ham told Donna he was planning to divorce her. He said that after Johanna graduated in the spring, that things were going to change. And if they got a divorce, she'd lose millions of dollars. But obviously, if he passes away, she gets the entire estate. So that's a big difference for her.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty big motive.
Yes. Donna's defense disagreed, of course, and they said that there was no direct evidence that she drugged him, and they actually argued that he drugged himself.
That was an interesting defense. I mean, I guess you have to say how it got into his system, right? Otherwise, mm-hmm. you've not refuted it. But from what I understand, I mean, you don't drink morphine.
Mm-mm. You'd have to inject it.
Yeah, so he's injecting himself with it. I don't know that he's got the skills to do that.
Yeah, does he have the wherewithal to do that kind of thing?
Yeah. Anybody can take a pill, but
right.
I don't know. That was just interesting. But they said that, you know, they had the position that he was either like hooked on drugs or whatever and then just overdosed himself. So I don't know.
After 9 days of testimony, both sides rested after making their closing arguments. The judge took just a 2-hour recess. The judge, Daniel Boughton, came back and found Donna Somerville not guilty. Most of the time during any kind of documentary, any kind of show like this, and they come back and say not guilty, I want to throw somebody through a window. This, I was like, I can understand that. That makes complete sense to me. Because I'm sorry,
yeah.
The prosecution, the police, the state, they did not have enough evidence to go to trial.
No, they didn't. They did not. They certainly didn't meet their burden of proof. You have to 100. There has to be no reasonable doubt. And again, all of their evidence that they're using, all of it, you could easily explain it by the other way. You know, I feel like except for saying that he drugged himself, I don't think that that happened. But I mean, I think that she killed him, but I feel like that is a little bit of a sticking point. But other than that, you know, prosecution says she was stealing drugs from her work for months. There's no evidence of that at all. So mm-hmm. you could take that away. The whole, she marked a page in the morphine book. Okay, well, she's going back to work after 10 years. A lot of people would brush up on stuff.
Right. I just feel like everything that the prosecution brought to evidence or brought as evidence to the trial was convenient for them. They were trying to make it work because they needed it to. And mm-hmm. while one would hope that just because you feel someone is guilty, but you don't have the evidence, you hope that maybe that would be enough, but it's not. It's just not. That's not how our justice system works.
No, and it's dangerous to do that because...
Well, now look at where we are, especially with someone like Donna Somerville in this whole case. She, because of double jeopardy, she cannot be tried again.
Right. So, yeah, even if she did kill him, it's... I hope to goodness she doesn't remarry and
do the same thing.
Do that again. But, and they call her the Black Widow of Orange County. And I'm like, I thought that was like, I don't know, the only Black Widows I've heard are like serial killers of husbands or whatever. I obviously hope that she doesn't turn around and do it again. But had they taken the time to actually get all the evidence they needed, even if it took a while, then you would remove that possibility of anybody else possibly getting hurt.
Right. Well, and again, I mean, I don't know how much money it costs to launch an investigation, but I know it costs quite a bit of money to have a trial for however long it took.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been wasted.
Yeah, totally. So she inherited the estate, Mount Athos, at the time that this was recorded. It just kind of ended with like, she still lives in Mount Athos. She rarely comes into town, like whatever.
At that time, Donna could not be tried again for Ham's murder, but she faced a $15 million wrongful death suit from Hamilton's daughters. And it said Donna continues to maintain her innocence. Then in 2011, Ham's daughters won the civil suit and Mount Athos will now become a retirement home for unwanted show horses, according to Sarah Somerville, who was Ham's daughter.
So there you have it.
There you have it. This kind of, I mean, I can't say, well, no, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's a slippery, sticky situation for me to be like, oh, this is my favorite episode or this is not my favorite episode, because I just don't, I don't love saying that about murder. Like, oh, my favorite. This episode kind of chapped my cheeks a little bit because there's no justice.
Right. I mean, even the civil suit, you know, I'm sure his daughters are like, we definitely don't want her to end up with his estate.
But they just want their dad back.
Yeah, and nothing's going to bring him back. Okay, even putting her in jail isn't going to bring him back, but it's going to protect other people from her greed turning into murder. And also, like, they want to see her held accountable. They want to see her punished.
Exactly. And unfortunately, unless she does something again, she won't be. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's it, guys.
Yep. Oof.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.